everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of season 11 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me as my first guest for watching the show, I guess you could say, not the intro that we did yesterday, is Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show once again, Jay. And sorry, it's not the first episode.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
I'm fine.
Yeah, it's the first, I'm not sure, like non-documentary episode, non-talking.
Yeah, well, the first non-interview episode, has it?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
First episode where something is actually happening, sure. as opposed to just listening to talking heads, telling us about the various stuff that we will get to know even better as we go through this miniseries over the next 130. Well, we have 134 episodes after today. So.
Okay, looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. So Jay, why don't you start by telling me a little bit about your history with Band of Brothers?
Sure. So I think the first time I saw it would have been about 20 years ago, during a period of time where I was just trying to watch as many things. I had like a list of things I needed to watch, and I was just watching as many as I can. Like half paying, this is when I first watched like Alien and Star Wars franchise and that kind of thing. As I wasn't paying a lot of attention to them at the time, but I remember I would watch a lot of things, but I'd be doing something else at the same time. That was the first time I watched it. I really enjoyed it. The second time I watched it was earlier this week. I haven't watched it in the meantime. This is not it's not a series that I'm very familiar with, but I remember being excellent. Actually, that's not true. I did watch the first episode again about 10 years ago because I tried to watch it with my wife, and she didn't want to watch more of it at the time. It was kind of a stressful show to watch because it's war. And war is stressful. War hell, as some might say. But it's one of those shows I always meant to go back to. And I'm glad I've had the opportunity to do so now by this podcast. At the time of recording, I've now rewatched the first 3 episodes, and I'm looking forward to watching the rest of them. It's a show that it still holds up. I've listened to podcasts about it. So it's kind of fresh in my mind. And it always kind of has been.
Well, you listened mostly to a podcast about someone who complained about the fact that he wasn't in it. But yeah.
Sure, but he still talked about it a lot. Yes, that's the Dead Eyes podcast, of course. Any listeners haven't listened to Dead Eyes, then they absolutely should do. Connor Ratliff is a very funny, funny man with a lot of stories
Connor,
to tell.
If you're listening, I'm still waiting for a response to my email. I'd love to have you on the show.
I was going somewhere with that, and I've derailed myself. So I'm not, because it's been a while since I saw it, I don't actually know the fates of many of these characters, like the talking heads at the start. I'm not sure which character is which in that. And I'm doing a good job so far of not spoiling myself, so I don't know who makes it out of the war.
Well, they purposely characters... do that in the talking heads.
That's the point.
Of the first 9 episodes where you don't know who each of them are, because they don't want you to know that which characters for sure have survived, because obviously there are characters who survived the miniseries but didn't make it till 2001 when they did the interviews, that type of thing also.
Yes. I don't know who, they are, who the ones in the show are, who the ones didn't make it out. So I know this is a true story, so it's not about which character is going to make it to the end. These aren't characters, they're real people. But I'm looking forward to finding out, following the Easy Company along.
Okay, fair enough. So episode 1.1, which obviously is the first 5-minute segment of part 1, following Talking Head interviews, begins with the title of part 1, which is Kurahi, and ends with Sobel yelling at Percante. So,
blousing his trousers.
Yes. I'm going to be doing this a little bit differently, obviously, than I've done in the past, because of the way that everything is cut here. Once again, because it's 5-minute episodes, but also when I've done them in the past, when people are trying to follow along, so you have, you know, 60 seconds or 300 seconds of a particular segment, but it starts at zero and goes to 60, or zero and goes to 300. Here we're jumping in the middle. You know, we have I think 4 minutes and 18 seconds or something like that of the talking heads and the intro to the episode, or to the, you know, to the miniseries, you know, which shows all the cast members and stuff like that, and the cast and the crew. So it's not like I'm going to be able to say, okay, we're going to be dealing with minute 5 to minute 10 right now or something like that. So I'm just going to be referring to them as the various parts. Hopefully anyone following along is either familiar or is going to be watching it as we go along, so they're going to get an idea as to what we're talking about with the whole thing.
I would suggest any listeners trying to follow on, watch the whole episode prior to your coverage of it and just kind of keep it in their head for a couple of weeks. And then watch the second episode just before, don't try and do it in segments.
Yeah.
I mean, what you want to do, but that's what I suggest.
I agree. I mean, the most any part will go is over, I think, 15 episodes or 16 episodes. So about 3 weeks is the long. I believe this, I believe part one is the longest of all of the
parts. I think
so. No, there's one other episode that, part 7. I can't remember called Part 7 also is just as long, and that one also has a total of 16 episodes, 14 plus 2. You know, for the two interviews that we'll do before and after. So in general, most of these parts will be around 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, something like that. We got about 6 months of listening to me and my guests and my special guests who I'll be interviewing talking about Band of Brothers. So I'm really looking forward to this. This 5-minute segment begins with us seeing the title card show up by saying Part 1. Kurahi, which obviously anyone who hasn't seen this before has no idea what Kurahi is. You'll be hearing Kurahi quite often throughout the course of this entire podcast, probably in every episode. That's the goal. So, and do you want to explain to people what Kurahi is?
It's a big hill.
That it is. Okay, that is one of the answers.
The hill.
No, it's not a hill. It's a mountain. That's first of all.
Sure. I'm unsure. Is it specifically a mountain? Because it looks like
it is a mountain. It's known as Kurahi Mountain.
Fine. There is the training camp where they train. It is next to this big hill, or this small mountain, which Easy Company and I assume the other companies routinely had to go up and down. It's 3 miles up, 3 miles down. Which is a reasonable ascent and descent. I run quite a lot. I run uphill. I live in areas that are hilly. And at one point, I think Sobol gives a guy 15 minutes to go up and back. That's insane. That's ridiculous. That's impossible. You can't do that. That's not going to happen. No one could do that.
Sometimes people are given tasks that they know that they can't, make. On purpose.
Sure. So, yeah, that's mean.
Well, Sobol is not known for being the nicest of commanders. I mean, we're only going to talk about it a little bit today, but over the next few episodes, I will be discussing a lot about Sobol, especially some quotes from the book itself of Band of Brothers. Have you ever read the book?
No, I haven't. No, but I do. I love Sobol. I love how mean he is. Not as a person, but as a character in this, I think he's great. And I love that he is successful in creating this. The Band of Brothers, from the title, is, I believe, begins with Sobol. He gives the men someone to root. They come together against him. That's not his intention. He thinks he's doing the right thing to bring them together as good people, like with him, but without his just being an awful person to all of them, I don't think they would have come together as much as they did.
Yes.
So his tactics are completely wrong, but the outcome is correct.
That's correct.
And I love that. Yeah, I can't imagine in real life he was quite as much of a character as David Schwimmer plays him, but
he was.
It works.
If you read the book, you'll know. And as difficult as it was for many of the Easy Men to say it, they all knew that Sobel was what brought them together.
Excellent. Good.
You know, the fact that
Sobel comes across.
Was such an ass helped them to form this bond, both together and against him.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. That really comes across watching the show.
You know, again, we'll talk more about it over the next few days when we talk a lot about Sobel. I agree. I like the character. First of all, how difficult it was for all these guys, for everything that they had to go through, and that, you know, he made them the fighting force that they were. His methods might not have been sane, but he still was able to get them to form such a strong bond, even in the parts where it was a bond against him. You know,
he's one of the parts I remembered from like that first watch. I remembered some of the things that Sobel does, like the making them eat the spaghetti and then running up the hill. Was something that's like ingrained in my mind. I'm not sure I knew it was from this, but I knew it was a thing I'd seen in something, and that's kind of stuck in there. When he's making them pour their canteens out, post march, and like one guy is empty because he ordered half empty because he had a drink. I've always been annoyed at that because, like, dude, read the rum, pour it out at an angle. Just pour it out a little. It will come out slower. It will finish at the same time as everyone else. You've got more chance of doing it. He just holds it directly upside down like an idiot, and it all comes out. Anyway, that's always something that's bothered me. Just a little bit of an angle, you would have been fine. There we are.
But I mean, it's in the book the story about the canteens. So it is something that he really did do, and they also mentioned the fact that he got them into such amazing physical shape. Because he himself, Sobel, was in perfect shape and ran them so hard for them to get into perfect shape that when they reached later stages of their training, they were all more fit than the people who were there to train them, and they made all the other sergeants look bad, the ones that were supposed to be training them in physical fitness because they were more fit than them. Because of what
running up Kurahi in Sobel makes it up in under 23 minutes is good. Like running up a 3 mile up a 3 mile hill is very good for 23 minutes.
Right.
Like I mean, he's up there counting them, so he probably made up there in 20.
Right.
I don't know if when I look at David Schwimmer,
that he feels that Sobel did things, He had the right idea, but just he did it the wrong way.
Yes, yelling "Hi-yo, Silver" as you run up a hill past these people who hate you is not going to make them hate you less.
Exactly. Kurahi is a Cherokee word, which means to stand alone, which obviously, the idea is that we stand alone, we have to work together and, do everything properly, which is the perfect name, for Easy Company. For them to refer to themselves, there's a documentary that you can watch on the DVD set of this movie or this miniseries, which has more interviews with a lot of the surviving men at the time of Easy Company, and it was called "We Stand Alone."
I see. Yeah. That makes sense, though. I think that's on my DVD set. I never. That's what it was called. That I thought, that's an interesting name. But now I know why.
The DVD I said I have is like a box. It's like a tin box that when you open it up, so when you pull it up, it like has a fan. I don't even know what you would call it.
Concertina?
I don't know. What is a concertina?
Like an accordion, like the squeeze
Sort of.
box kind of
Okay.
thing.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah. I think that makes sense. That's the right. That is the right word.
There we go. Great. I don't have that set, but I am familiar with it. I thought Kurahi would be called standing alone because it's one mountain on its own. It's like you look at like the landscape that it's in. It's just kind of a mountain surrounded by flat area. So it seems like it's just one mountain on its own. It's the lonely mountain from The Hobbit.
That is definitely a possibility.
It works for both.
Oh wow, there was the Battle of Kurahi during the Civil War
Sure.
on October 12th, 1864, when the Confederates actually won the battle. I mean, I know you know the conversion, but 3 miles up, 3 miles down is 5 kilometers up, 5 kilometers down. That type of thing.
Yeah, be just like 5 kilometers is 3.1 miles, I think. Yeah. But there is a waterfall on Kurahi Mountain. I love waterfalls, and it's not shown in the show, which I think is a travesty.
Oh well, I guess they didn't want to make the didn't want to show that the guys enjoyed running by a waterfall.
It's just like have them stop for a little drink, stop by the waterfall for a drink on their way down or wherever it is on the route. But no, don't have that, surely.
Interesting. Okay, we see that we're dealing with June 4th, 1944. So this is 2 days before the D-Day invasion, and we see that they are in Upottery, England. Are you familiar with Upottery?
No, I forgot to write down where they were.
It's near East Devon, England.
No,
Don't
I'm
know
not
if that
familiar
I don't know if that
with.
helps you at all. I mean,
I
you're
haven't
more
been there.
familiar than I am.
I guess well, it might be called Upottery, but I don't know. It's one of those British town names that even people born here will be guessing how to say. But yeah, I've not really been to Devon. So it's not an area I'm familiar with, but Devon is on the southeast coast of England, so it makes sense that that's where they would be flying from, because that's the closest point to France.
Well, it looks like it's the southwest coast from what I'm looking on the map.
Oh, sorry. Yes, what am I talking about? I'm talking about Dover. Devon. Dover's the southeast. Devon's the southwest. Yeah. Devon and Cornwall.
It borders
I've
with
been to Cornwall.
Somerset.
Somerset. Somerset. Yeah. I've got
And
friends from Somerset.
around the other parishes around there are Yarcombe, Stockland, Cotley, Monkton, Luppett, and Clayhidden. Absolutely no
Nothing
idea where
pleases
any
me
of that
more
is.
than Americans pronouncing English town names. So great.
Can you pronounce all those better? Go ahead.
which ones did you say?
Well, you want me to mangle them once again?
Yes, please.
Okay, Yarcombe.
Yarcombe. See, I'm not even sure where you're looking at. I'm looking at a map, and that's not even coming up. It's actually a million miles away from where I've lived for a long time, because I'm only in Bournemouth,
Right.
which is, let me just check how far away it is. It's about 70 miles away, east of a pottery. So that's not that far away. Yeah, I've never been. I've probably driven through, like, past it, because we go to Cornwall, which is a proper southwest, quite a bit. We used to go there quite a bit. So we would have gone past it. I've probably seen it on a sign and just not thought anything about it. Yeah. There's
So
no
then you
rhyme or
have
reason. That's nice.
Stockland. Did I pronounce mispronounce Stockland?
That's fine. That's Stockland's
Okay.
fine. Yeah, you
Cotley.
but these are also like little villages that I've never
They're
heard of either.
parishes. So yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So we know that we're in Upottery, England.
Yes, we're not there for long in the show.
There are a few scenes, and I have a guest coming up in I believe maybe the end of this week, who actually will talk about that, because he wanted to talk about it.
Oh,
So
great.
we'll wait and see, or maybe it's next week that he's going to be on. I'm trying to remember when he's going to be on. It'll be next week. The end of next week, he'll be on to talk about that. All right, and then we get lot of shots of men getting ready, walking towards their planes. I mean, I like the way that the picture is saturated here. The color is saturated with everything that's going on.
I mean, that's pretty standard for the rest of the show.
Yeah, completely. I'm talking about in general, you know.
Yeah, I think this is maybe the most colorful episode of it, just because so much time is spent not in saturation.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. And whatever, we just see a whole bunch of soldiers getting prepared. And we see the different ways that each of them are getting prepared. We see how they're all carrying these huge equipment bags. So, you know, just it the way that this scene shows us how much stuff these men had to carry and take with them is just unbelievable.
You know, how much of it didn't really make it to where they're going.
That's true. That's right. And we hear different people shouting in different places. We hear someone say, okay, boys, let's get that gear stowed. And then we hear someone else say, Fox Company, we go in five. And then someone walks up to a different soldier and goes, Sergeant Maynard? And he goes, nope.
That's the problem. Everyone's in their army gear, all the gear the grease paint. Everyone looks the same.
Yeah, it's very difficult to know who any of these people are. You know, yeah. But right now it's inconsequential. They're showing us, you know, the various ways that soldiers were trying to prepare themselves and I guess try and keep calm in this situation. Like we see someone playing with his dog tags that has a cross on it. We see Lipton stretching. We see one guy just sitting and chewing gum. Yeah,
playing with his knife.
Yeah, we'll get there. We're gonna get to that in a second. I love the scene where they show one of the platoons marching past a British anti-aircraft gun, just to show like the difference between the American British soldiers at the time as they're getting ready here. Then we see
it's not in this segment, but my least favorite part of the show so far in this rewatch is the Cockney guy they meet up with, like, towards the end of the episode. Just the stereotypical it's a British guy, he must be Cockney, get your going up some apples and pears, get your mince pies on this. I hate that guy. I hate him so much. That's not how we talk.
Okay.
Some people talk through that a little bit, but he wouldn't do that in this situation. He's talking to Americans. He'd only be doing that if he's trying to confuse them. And that's not... Right. It's funny, but it irritates me so much.
I completely can understand that. And then we see Lipton, checking his ammo and putting ammo in the thing. And then we see Liebgott giving a guy a mohawk.
Yep.
It's really strange. I didn't really understand the whole idea of why they would do that. Obviously, the idea of the mohawk came from the Mohawk Indians, who that's part of the hairstyle that they were use at the time. They are nowadays associated with like punk rockers and things like that. And so the idea is that during World War II, there were paratroopers in the 101st who decided to get mohawk haircuts in order to try and intimidate their enemies. But
okay.
the thing I find really funny is if that's the reason that they were trying to do it, weren't they wearing
helmets?
Helmets? Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the guy behind, what was the name of the barber?
Liebgott.
Doing the haircut?
Behind Liebgott. Liebgott's the barber.
Yeah. So there's a guy behind Liebgott who has what looks to be a freshly shaven head. So maybe this guy's not.
No,
he's getting a mohawk.
No, that guy's a mohawk also.
Oh yeah, sorry, I had it stopped on a frame, and then like two frames later, you see a little bit of
that. That's right. You see a little bit of the fact that it's a mohawk.
He's dishing out mohawks, sure.
That's right. Why not? Isn't that the way that you should be doing these things?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I mean, it's not a haircut I've ever had and will never have.
I don't plan on getting that either.
One of my favorite shows, TV shows, is Taskmaster. Are you familiar with Taskmaster?
Nope, not familiar with it at all.
Okay, it's a comedy show. It's five comedians over 10 weeks being given random tasks to do and being awarded points for how well they do them. And one of them had to bring in something that makes you look tough. And so we went through, this is like the last one of the series, and there's a guy called Mike Wozniak, who's a great TV actor and writer and comedian, who I can't remember what it is. He brought in something quite innocuous, but then it was revealed that he also had cut his hair into a mohawk, and he had like a beautiful head of like long hair, and this big hat on. And he pulled the hat off, and he had this huge, great mohawk. It was incredible and was a defining moment of the show from like season 11, I think.
Right.
And that's
Oh,
whenever I see a
they've
mohawk,
had
that's
it.
what I think of.
They've had it since 2015. It's
Yeah,
20 seasons.
they're on season 20 at the moment. Yeah, Jason Mantzoukas was on season 19 for any Americans listening. If you've somehow made it this far without discovering Taskmaster, watch it. It's great. It's my favorite. It's very silly. It's a very silly show. It's a show about nothing. It's the
Hey,
Seinfeld panel
that's what
show.
Seinfeld is.
Yeah. But this is a panel show about it. Well, it's some people will think it's not about it, get really into it, and like it is about the points, but if you it can't be about the points because the tasks they get to do are very silly. Yeah,
Interesting.
so people who do well at it are silly people.
Okay,
But yeah,
makes sense.
that's what Mohawks make me think of.
Okay. And we see a guy smoking, we see someone playing with a knife, as you mentioned before. Different people check in other people's gear. We see people praying, doing their crosses as they're getting ready
It's,
to.
so people check people's gear. It's Neil McDonough. It's checking people's gear. I love Neil McDonough.
Yes.
Great actor.
Yeah,
Who, whenever I
Buckwalter.
see him,
He's
I
great.
mainly think of him. I mainly think of him in Ravenous, where he's not in it for very long, but his introduction is like Ravenous is a group of like the dregs of humanity left in this outpost, and he is a very angry guy who we first were introduced to. He stood in some rapids, topless, just screaming. That's the introduction to his character, and it always makes me laugh just thinking about it. That's how we meet Neil McDonough, just in the water, and here he's here being quite a reasonable man in this.
Yeah, we're gonna have a lot to say about Neil McDonough and Buck Compton over the course of this series, because he's quite prominently featured here, and
Yeah.
I love him too. I think he's a great actor, and I mean I've seen him in some really good stuff lately also. What's the name of that movie that he was in? He was just in a movie recently that he's created a TV show of it also, the
I certainly haven't seen it.
Homestead.
No, I have not seen Homestead.
Homestead, that's very interesting. He was also very good in The Last Rodeo, which I just saw, and I really like that also.
Nice. Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of what he's in recently. I'm trying to think what the most recent thing I've seen him in, and I'm not sure. It's been a while.
Right, and I always loved the TV show Boomtown when that was on. That was on also in 2002. The idea of
Probably
Boomtown
never heard of
was
that.
is that they you ever see Boomtown?
Never heard of it.
Okay, it was a TV show that was only on for 2 seasons, but what they did was is that it's about like police and lawyer, the DA and all that stuff, but it tells a story from various characters' perspectives in order to tell the full story. It's like a Rashomon type of thing where what you think is going on isn't really what's always going on, which is great. It's trying to guess like what is it that they're gonna be doing here.
You've got to go back 12 years to find the last thing I saw him in, which was Red 2.
Oh wow. Yeah, it's been a
Yeah,
while.
there's just too much to watch these days.
I completely agree with you on that one. Even though I do my best, but I
You do better than most.
But I still don't manage. Right. Then we get another shot of a guy with a huge, huge, huge duffel bag. Again, showing us how much gear these guys have to take. We see Winter climb into a plane, look around. We see guys with war paint on their
Yep.
faces. The black paint that you see a lot in war movies, in order to that they won't be seen, by the enemy. And then we hear someone scream, No, first someone says, first platoon, draw some arms. It'll be too late when you face the enemy. And then we hear someone scream and saying, easy company. And we get to see that it's actually the commander of Thomas Meehan, played by Jason O'Mara in one of his very early roles. And we see him standing on one of the planes, and the men all start. Sorry, he's standing on his Jeep. So he's standing on his Jeep, and the men all start coming around. And what's interesting is for someone like me who does recognize some of the guys, it's fun to see them in this type of scene, because I know where we're going to see them later on. But here they're people that we just don't even know yet. That type of thing. So then he gives a little speech and goes, listen up, gather up around me, move it up, come on, let's go. He says, the Channel coast is socked in rain and fog, high winds on the drop zone, no jump tonight. The invasion has been postponed, we're on 24-hour stand down. And we see that the guys are a little disappointed because obviously they were anticipating this whole thing. And then we hear someone say, drill sergeants, take charge. And we see someone goes, first platoon. And then the shot changes, and we're no longer on the airfield. When we get to see that people are in a movie theater, which is
Yeah, see, I just
a
wanted to
little
work
strange.
like the jump being postponed. I can't imagine there's many of the men there looking forward to actually undertaking the jump, but
I
you
think
gotta
you're
feel like
wrong. I think
the wait the waiting is perhaps worse
correct.
than doing it. So they've now got like an extra day or two, as it turns out, of that anticipation, that knot in your stomach growing and growing. Like,
Exactly.
it's going to
That's
come at
what it
some point.
comes
He's
down
got to
to.
get out of the way.
That's what it completely comes down to. And then we get to see a Cary Grant movie on the screen. Did you look up what movie that is?
I believe it is Mr. Lucky. It's not a film I'm
Yes.
familiar with. I had never heard of it before,
I'd
and I
never
have
heard
not
of it.
seen it since.
I've never heard of it, and I've seen this clip many times because I've seen this series probably about 10 times.
It's like when Wally's watching Hello Dolly. Never seen Hello Dolly, but
Okay.
love Wally.
That's actually surprising that you've never seen Hello Dolly from that perspective, but yeah. So it's a movie with Cary Grant and Lorraine Day from 1943. And we get a little bit of dialogue from the movie itself, where well, this is quite a surprise. Not particularly. It so happens I rather expected it. Well, I can't see how you people can pass up $80,000 for the cause. For whose cause? If you're so interested in serving your cause, why don't you join the army? I'm 4F. You look 1A to me. You don't look so bad yourself. Well, it's my arteries. Should you be giving blood? So. This isn't the first time that that I've seen in World War II movies where they're showing the men trying to watch some sort of comedy to lighten the situation. That type of thing. So.
Yeah, but it's deliberate. They've used the clip of one talking about a guy who doesn't want to go fight, and
That's
they're there on the eve of
right.
battle, fighting to save these people. But I do like how they're sat there, like Michael Fassbender's amongst them, or just they just kept the grease paint on their face because why bother washing it off? You just got to put it on again tomorrow.
Yeah, of
Just may
course.
as well just kind of sit there and look off into space instead of watching this film that's almost mocking you.
True. One of the things I liked about the when I was looking up what Mr. Lucky is, so the name of the director was H.C. Potter.
From It's Wonderful Life. Sure.
Well, it could be either
We've
from
already
It's a
covered
Wonderful
that.
Life or Harry Potter, because his name was Henry Potter. So it fits in with both. Another connection to Harry Potter.
Good. That's just what we need, more of those.
That's right. Well, it's interesting where we're getting these connections from. We're getting them from a miserly old man in Bedford Falls, and from a movie about someone who doesn't want to join the army. Then we see that someone walks out from the tent, and we see that it's Dick Winters, first lieutenant, second lieutenant Dick Winters, and you know, takes out his gloves and he starts walking, and you know, as he's walking out of the tent, Nix is there, and Nix says, "I think he's clearing up." And then he looks at Winters, and goes, "You think it's clearing up?" And he goes, "Nope." He goes, "Well, I think he's clearing up." He goes, "How are your men?" He goes, "They'll be fine." Then he looks around and he goes, "Well, it's 5 o'clock in New York, 4 o'clock in Chicago." And he, you know, you can obviously see that he's walking around with a little flask of booze. And he goes, "Happy hour, huh?" He goes, "Yep, happy hour." So are you familiar with the term happy hour?
I am. It is a term that has often confused me because it is rare that it lasts only an hour. It tends to be 2 to 4 in most places at like hour length. Around here, but yeah, it's a time usually after 5 p.m. when work and most people finish work, go to a bar and drinks will be cheaper or food will be cheaper. Certain drinks, certain cocktails perhaps will be a little bit cheaper than normal to try and entice people in to take a load off after their day of work and drink more booze than they perhaps should on a work night.
I agree. So it's a scheduled period of entertainment.
You know, scheduled period of entertainment. How fun that sounds.
Which came from the Navy. Okay, they had the Happy Hour Club, the Happy Hour Social Club, and similar variants. They've had them since the early 1880s.
Oh.
Then they there were ships that would have Happy Hour Social where people can go to smoke various. Ships. During these times, they would have different types of entertainment. They would have boxing, wrestling matches, music, dancing, movies. And by the end of World War One, it had spread throughout the entire Navy. During Prohibition, that's when it started the idea that people would drink before dinner. Because you know, people would have what they would call cocktail hours, but they would know they'd call them happy hours at speakeasies before they would go out to restaurants where they couldn't have their alcohol. The idea was is you can go get a quick drink before you go out to dinner type of thing in a speakeasy, which we've talked about in the past, what a speakeasy was. And now it's a term used for afternoon drinks in a bar. And what, you know, the whole idea is that you know, as you said, after a long day at work, someone just wants to go and have a drink before they go home. So different countries have different rules and regulations regarding happy hour. So for instance, in Ireland, it's completely illegal to have a happy hour because there is a law of the Intoxicating Liquor Act that was enacted in 2003. Therefore, you can't have those. In the United Kingdom, there is a national mandatory licensing conditions that was introduced in 2010 and requires licensees to take all reasonable steps to prevent irresponsible drink promotions, which effectively banned traditional happy hours. Are you aware of that?
No, I don't know how ruthlessly that is adhered to, because I know of a lot of places where what I would describe as traditional happy hours exist, and I am familiar with friends who use these places often. I'm not against people going and have a drink. I have a drink myself quite often, but I don't tend to go out and get drunk. Whereas, and you know, it's fine if you do it now and then. I have some friends who do it often, so I don't think there's anything really in place to stop people getting drunk because it happens quite a lot.
Right.
I normally live in a student town. It happens a lot.
Right. Right. In Glasgow, in 2004, they banned happy hours in order to reduce binge drinking.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
In the U.S., so Massachusetts was the first state to ban happy hours in 1984. And the idea is to prevent drunk driving and avoid nuisances to neighbors from loud crowds or public drunkenness, and to discourage unhealthy consumption of a large amount of alcohol in a short time, because obviously, if you only have an hour or an hour and a half, whatever it is, and it's discounted, there are people who are going to be drinking more and more.
Yes, actually, I have some friends who went to a happy hour, a bottomless brunch recently, where there were like seven cocktails on the menu, and they went through all of them and then started going through them again in the hour and a half they were allowed to do so, and then went to the pub afterwards and apparently had a great time by the sounds of things.
Oh, wow. Interesting. There are 10 states that currently have happy hours banned. You have Alaska, Hawaii, Indiana, Maine, Massachusetts, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Rhode Island, Utah, and Vermont. And North Carolina is actually in the process. They have a bill that's pending that's trying to ban happy hours.
That just feels mean for Alaska. Like, what else is there to do? Give these people a chance to have a drink.
Well, you don't want people, driving those dog sleds. Drunk dog sled driving. And at this point, Nixon then says, a couple of drinks maybe, an early dinner before the theater. Civilized place for civilized men.
I like this conversation between these two guys. You get a real sense that they're friends immediately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
spoiler alert, they become lifelong friends.
Yeah. Gotcha. And you get a sense of their characters. Like, Nix is optimistic, likes to drink, likes to smoke, whereas Winters is more realistic, a bit reserved. More taciturn. reserved, that's a good word. And we learn that he doesn't drink, he doesn't really smoke, but he is using this. He knows that his friend does, and he's like bonding with him. This is the way that this is something they can talk about despite not doing it himself. I like this interaction between these two.
And then Winters makes a very strange comment because he says, should have been born earlier, Nix. I don't know what that means. Because earlier would have been, if he was a little bit younger, or if he was born earlier, so he'd be a little older, but then he would have been younger during Prohibition.
It sounds like what he's describing of like the drinks before dinner, that kind of thing, sounds like the Roaring Twenties.
What I was talking about before with the speakeasies, you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I feel like Nix is describing a night out in like the mid to late 20s.
Okay, all right, okay.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I didn't think about it from that perspective. And then Nixon goes, what? And give up all this? He goes, we'll go to Chicago. I'll take you there. He goes, yeah, we'll see. And then he goes, actually, you know who's from there? Who? Anyways, and he goes, him.
Yeah.
Which I gotta say is a great transition to be able to do it that way. You know, and then he goes, well, 712 days with that son of a bitch, and here we are.
Yeah, exactly 2 years.
Yes.
Well, no.
Yeah. No, slight.
No, almost 2 years.
That's right.
Yeah.
2 years would have been 730.
So yeah,
slightly below that, but
It's 356 days in the year. No, it's 365. Yeah.
Yes. And again, as you said, this is a great scene between the two of them because it really shows us, the bonding that these two guys have through this whole thing. And then it caps things off by saying, we spent almost 2 years together with that son of a bitch. You know, that type of thing. And then the title on the screen tells us that it's 2 years. There's a fade out, and then it says 2 years earlier. It says Camp Toccoa, Georgia.
Yeah, the font of all of these things, and Curry at the start, it seems like a typewriter font.
Yes.
To me, that's got to be a Tom Hanks.
That is definitely a Tom Hanks. I have no qualms about that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, good.
None whatsoever. Then we see a...
it's colorful. My eyes.
A very colorful picture. But it also looks very, very fake. This looks CGI. I don't know why I think that. Maybe because of the way that the clouds are.
Yeah, it does look like the colors have been artificially...
Or painting or something like that. You know, just... I don't know.
It definitely could be. With like some little CGI smoke added, little bits here and there. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Right, and you see in the background, Curry, and then the shot. We can hear the sound of like flies, or mosquitoes, or something. And then the shot focuses on Nixon, and we see him smack the back of his neck. To deal with whatever pest that is disturbing at that point. And then we see a shot of Winters there also. And then we get David Schwimmer, Captain Sobel.
Yeah, just marching into this, stealing the rest of the episode.
I wouldn't even call him marching. He's just bursting in there. And we hear him scream, "You people are in a position of attention." And, you know, he walks through the guys. Some of them are more at attention than others. And, you know, we see him past Nixon at the beginning, and then we see him past Winters. Winters closes his eyes as he walks by him, you know, suspicious of what's going on. Looks back. And then it's a great shot of Sobel passing through the men, you know, because we see them all lined up, orderly, and he's just like, the camera's in between the men, and we see him just like pass through them, as he's looking for some sort of infraction. And then he stops in front of Percante, and he goes, "Private Percante, did you blouse your trousers over your boots?" And what I like also is that Percante knows to put his gun at attention pass it off
for inspection. Yeah.
You know, it's like it's already something that's been drilled in.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'll talk about it in the next episode, but there's no way that this group would have gotten out of this with their weekend passes in place. This is just Sobel looking for any kind of excuse.
Yes.
Finding it, literally anything. A loose thread. A loose thread on Donnie Wahlberg's shoulder.
Yeah.
Anyway, you'll get there.
I will talk much more about that in the next few days. And as Sobel is yelling at Percante, this 5-minute segment ends. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about dealing with this 5-minute segment or this or part one of the miniseries? Because you're only going to be back for the first action episode, I guess, of part two. Anything else?
I just love David Schwimmer's portrayal here. I think he's easily the most well-known actor of the whole series at this point, mid Friends, and this is such a different character than Ross Geller, but he does it so well. I think so. He doesn't talk about dinosaurs at all.
No,
I just think it could be distracting. Like, it's David Schwimmer playing this role, but he's in it so well. You never forget it's Schwimmer, but it's so different. He does it so well. He's so hateable. I just love everything Sobel does and how awful he is. It's very entertaining. That's it. I just wanted to credit. So, I mean, I mentioned earlier some of the bits, like the spaghetti. All of the running. It's a good episode. It's a good kickoff to the series.
Yes. All right. The segment that we will be dealing with today is Band Brand, where we will be talking about fictional movie bands or singers that, with the idea that it's possible some of them have become real bands or singers because of the movies. But so why don't you give us your top five fictional movie bands, starting with number five and working your way up.
Well, this was actually a difficult list to come up with, surprisingly. I love it when you ask me for suggestions for categories and I pitch you a joke one and it makes it into the episode. So that's good. Maybe I'll pitch you two joke ones and they'll both make it in.
but it made sense, doesn't it?
Kind of. I just love that I threw out two, like, you won't pick these, they're ridiculous, and that's what we're doing, so great. I love when that happens.
Thank you once again.
I thought this would be like a real slim pickings, but I was trying to whittle it down from like 20, and I'll give a honorable mention to Figure and Dan and the Metal Nodes, of course, from Star Wars, and from TV. If this was more TV stuff, then I would have had the Worthless Peons, which is the band from Scrubs, that are like a four-part band. Like, they're all the underlings of the bosses, so led by Ted. But my number five, sometimes they're called Sonic Death Monkey, sometimes they're known as Kathleen Turner Overdrive, but they performed as Barry Jive in the Uptown Five in High Fidelity, a film all about music. Like, cause going through the whole film, Jack Black's character is like, "Oh, my band's great, my band," and John Cusack's character is very much against him having a band performing live. And then when they do play, they sing Marvin Gaye's "Let's Get It On" very well because it's Jack Black and he's being Jack Black and he's great. I love Jack Black. So that's only one performance we see, but Barry Jive in Uptown Five make it to number five. Number four is another comedy. It is Andy Samberg as Connor Farrell. In Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping. From this point on, these are all I whittled it down to bands or artists where I've listened to their music outside of the film, where I have purchased an album and listened to the album in its entirety. The rest of these, Connor Farrell has some real great songs on there. Finest Girl is an excellent song. But he just has some real classics, and Andy Samberg does a very good job at being this atrocious person. Number three,
He's good at that.
he is very good at that. Number three is Sing Street from the film Sing Street, an excellent John Carney film, a delightful album.
I've been meaning
Brown
to rewatch
Shoes
that for years. I really
is
like it
really
because
good.
I love 80s music, so especially Duran Duran.
Sing Street works very well as an album because you have the real songs peppered in with the Sing Street songs that like do one for us, one for them kind of thing across the album, which works because you get like the influence of the real songs and then the songs that inspired them to make. Brown Shoes is my favorite song on there. Drive It Like You Stole It is the most well known. It's also very good, but Brown Shoes is
I
the one
love
I
Driving
go
Like You
back
Stole
to.
It. I'm a
Yeah,
big
it's great.
fan of.
Number two, I imagine will be on quite a few people's list. It is the Blues Brothers. Started out on SNL, as did Andy Samberg. I don't need to say much about the Blues Brothers. The film's great. The sequel, we don't talk about it. But it's a great album. I think they went on to start performing as a real band. For numerous places. About excellent album, excellent film. And number one, this will be on at least two of your other guests' top fives across the series, if Nick and Todd are going to be on here. But it is, of course, Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem from The Muppets. Who are very entertaining and very silly and have a drummer who is an animal who grows massive and takes over a town. If I can put Muppets on a list, I'll put Muppets on a list, and that's what I've done. So there we are.
All right. Excellent.
Other honorable mentions I really had to whittle down were I didn't have Spinal Tap on here. I like Spinal Tap, but I just haven't seen the film as many times as other people have. David Brooke have it as number one, I'm sure. Sex Bob-omb from Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is great. I love all of the bands from A Mighty Wind, the other Christopher Guest film. So
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
new
yes.
main the new Main Street Singers, the Folksmen, and Mitch and Mickey. I love them all. I love that album as well. And the two Coen Brothers artists, Soggy Bottom Boys from My Brother Out There, and Llewyn Davis from Inside Llewyn Davis, both excellent, incredible albums. There as well. So that's some honorable mentions. I wanted to get the Pinheads from Back to the Future in there, but no, they're not great. They're just too darn loud.
Yeah, but you could put Marvin's cousin.
Chuck Berry.
Right, Marvin Berry. Marvin Berry,
Is it
sorry, Chuck.
Starlighters? Marvin Berry and the Starlighters, is it?
Maybe. Could be. Yeah,
To Google.
I haven't even tried to do my list yet, and I have no idea who's gonna be on at this point.
Marvin Berry and the Starlighters. Hell
There
yeah.
you go.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. So every day we also have a separate game called Name That World War II Film.
Okay.
So once again, randomly, I'm going to give you clues about a movie that is a World War II movie. I am not. I've excluded Holocaust movies. This is just World War II movies.
Okay.
So the answer will not be Schindler's List.
Narrows it down by one. Fantastic. It won't be the boy in the striped pajamas. Narrows it down by
No,
two.
it will not be.
Hey.
Trust me, there were a lot that I took off. I took off even Anne Frank and a whole bunch of things because I wanted to specifically deal with movies that deal with the war itself, the fighting aspects of it, I guess you could say. So let's spin the wheel and see what random movie Jay is going to have to try and guess. And around and around and around this goes.
Not going to be Showa. You
know that. No, it will not be
Showa.
You got an interesting one. I don't know if you've ever seen this. It's a great favorite of mine.
Let's find out.
Okay. It is a movie from 1956. About the Battle of the Bulge, okay, and it's about a group of soldiers that do not like their commander, and it stars Jack Palance, and also has Eddie Albert, Lee Marvin, Robert Strauss, Richard Jackal, Buddy Ebsen is in it also. Do you have any idea what this movie?
No, I hadn't heard of half of those actors.
You haven't heard of any of those actors? Okay, so
I've heard of Jack Palance. He's Jack from Batman. Palance. Okay. And City Slickers.
Right. Eddie Albert from Green Acres.
Us. I haven't heard of Green Acres.
Okay. Lee Marvin, I'm assuming you've heard of.
I've heard of Lee Marvin, yes. But I can't tell you what he's been in.
The Dirty Dozen,
of course, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Robert Strauss was in Stalag 17, he played Animal.
Seen that yet.
Okay, you've never seen that. Oh,
I'm waiting for season 17 of your show.
Seriously.
We've talked about this.
Richard Jackal.
Nope.
Also from the Dirty Dozen.
Okay.
Buddy Ebsen.
I've only seen that once.
Okay. Buddy Ebsen was the Beverly Hillbillies.
I've heard of Buddy Ebsen, but I haven't. I have no idea what this film is from.
Okay, so it's actually called...
How many words in the title? Okay. Is it like a place name?
No, and it has an exclamation point.
War.
No, it's called Attack.
Attack, okay. I was not going to get that.
No, probably not. But it's a great movie because it shows you know, the tension between two officers, one of them who knows what he's doing, and one of them who doesn't know what he's doing, and so you sort of can compare that to things that go on here in Band of Brothers, because there's a whole idea: do we kill this officer instead of him getting us killed along the way, or you know, or do we figure out some other way of staying alive?
Do enjoy when they make him cut the fence and let the cows out.
Oh yeah,
that was something else I remembered. Oh, that's from this show. Great, I knew that was in something.
Exactly. All right, so Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jay Cluett until the next part in, another 16 episodes when you'll be back?
Sure. So Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is my podcast, where myself and friend of the show, Mark Hoffmeyer, who will be on later this season, I'm sure, talk about the Deep Blue Sea trilogy, scene by scene, and other Deep Blue Sea adjacent films, some of which take place during World War II. So we had the likes of USS Indianapolis, Men of Honor, and most recently Beast of War, two World War II shark movies. They exist, they're out there. We like to talk about anything directed by Rennie Harlin or featuring sharks or aquatic action, and you can find us over at Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, or follow us on social media at Deep Blue Sea Pod.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, curry!
Curry!